All right, here we are, May 4th, and Michael's going to lead us in discussion. And we're on Acts of the Three Nephites, chapter 14, 34, or starting 35. Go ahead, Michael.
We'll actually start in verse 34 today, and the allegory is quite long. I think we have 60, let's see, 60 verses to get through, and we've been going at this for I think 3 weeks now. This may be our fourth week, so it might take us another 3 weeks to get through, but it's good that we go slow because there's a lot to unpack here. So I'll go ahead and start us off in verse 34, and we'll just kind of work our way around again. And if any others join us, even better. Okay, it says, "And the Lord of the vineyard said unto the servant, What shall we do for this tree, that it may again store its good fruit for me?" And we've learned in previous verses that the good fruit are those high and holy sentiments of the people, the branches. "And the servant said to his master, Look, because you have grafted branches of the wild olive tree, that is the Gentiles, into the natural olive tree through Christ, then they nourished the roots so that they are alive and not dead. See therefore that they are still good. And let me read 35. But behold, the Lord of the vineyard said unto his servant, It is of no use to me, the tree and its roots, if they bear evil fruit. Nevertheless, knowing that their roots are good, I will preserve them for a future purpose. And because of their great strength, they have produced good fruits of the grafted branches. And henceforth, the grafted branches will grow and overcome the roots of the tree. And because the branches are grafted, will grow and overcome the roots, that it will produce many evil fruits. Then it will produce many evil fruits and be thrown into the fire unless we do something to preserve it." Okay, and these verses are the same in Jacob chapter 5 in the Book of Mormon. This is 33 through 37. So we're talking about the tree that was planted in the good land. This is where we left off from last week. This is the tree and that separates the seed of Lehi, from from Jerusalem and the Mediterranean, where the other trees are planted. This tree was planted in a good land in the Americas. And in the previous verse, it talked about the days of the predicted darkness are fulfilled, which refers to Isaiah chapter 60. We're talking about the days of Joseph Smith here, I believe. And the Gentiles are being grafted into the tree, and they helped preserve the roots of the tree so that the roots would stay strong. Russell, do you have a comment?
Before we get into the discussion of the verse, I just want to notice what you did when you read 34, where it talks about the Gentiles in the natural olive tree through Christ. I'm sorry, that is the Gentiles. You wrote, instead of reading in, you wrote into the natural olive tree. I think into is the intended meaning, and in doesn't quite get it there, it seems to me like. You did it without even thinking about it. You said in two instead of
Oh,
in.
did I? I did. Okay. Yeah, the Gentile. I know we're not supposed to change words, so my apologies for that. The Gentiles in the natural olive tree. I guess it's just the in my head. The English, the into made more sense. But whether it's in or into, they were grafted through Christ and they nourished the roots.
I have a comment. We touched on this last week. It was somebody said it's remarkable how the Jewish people have kept their religion through all these centuries. And I just wondered that maybe by the Gentiles using the Bible, which comes from the civilization, maybe that sort of made them more interested in their own religion and kept them alive, because it says, then they nourish the roots, which is Israel, so that they are alive and not dead. And we can see how active the Jewish, people are now with the remaking of Israel, or, Four word choice, but yeah, that's my comment.
Yeah, no, that's a great observation. Those Gentiles being grafted in and nourishing the roots to keep the tree alive. Any other thoughts on that?
Yes, I was just reading Jeremiah 24 last week, talking about good fruits, just to stay a little bit in the green zone, because it's about the parable of the good and the bad figs, and it's also about producing good fruits and what the Lord will do with the good figs and the bad figs. For instance, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, like these good figs, so will I acknowledge them that are carried away captive of Judah, whom I have sent out of this place into the land of the Chaldeans for their good. For I will set mine eyes upon them for good, and I will bring them again to this land, and I will build them and not pull them down, and I will plant them and not pluck them up. And I will give them a heart to know me, that I am the Lord, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God, for they shall return unto me with their whole heart.
Wow, that's in Jeremiah what?
Yeah, Jeremiah 24.
Jeremiah chapter 24. I didn't even think of that
Yeah.
one. That's a good corresponding verse.
Yeah, it's a great chapter. It's fantastic. Yeah, and it's also about Josiah, or it says Jehoiakim. Well, in at least a name that's also in the sealed book, I believe. But now I read the inspired version of Joseph Smith, and there are different names than from the Bible that I've read, but okay. In the first verse.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a side note.
No, that's a
But
very good connection.
talking about good and bad fruits, yeah, and the reward of the good fruits. That's how I see this a little bit.
Right. Well, in verse 35, it talks about preserving them for a future purpose. And I'm not sure we know what that future purpose is, or he also talks about preserving them for the next season. And I
Yeah.
think you kind of touched on that last time about the eternal circle, if that's what that means. Steve, were you going to say something?
No, but that's what rings in my heart, the eternal circle. It's a new filter. You go back and read some of these scriptures, and all of a sudden, some of it makes very clear sense. Another generation, the next season, for future generation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think at least when I go through this and I read it, and then I read John Pratt's kind of his interpretation of it that he posted on his website, he talks about five different times that the Lord of and his servant come down. And we only get the name of the first servant. I think back in verse 17, it talks about Daniel, the servant of the Lord. And John poses the question. He's like, it's very interesting to ponder this. Is the servant the same individual that comes down each time? Or is it just a new prophet that represents being the servant of the Lord, the current prophet of that day? And he kind of leaves it out there, but I mean, it almost makes it sound like that you could interpret this that the servant is the same spirit that keeps coming back with the Lord, and they work together in the vineyard. And John identifies Joseph Smith as being one of those servants, as I think on the fourth visit, or maybe it was the third. And then Mauricio is the next one. And then there's one more during the millennium that will come. The one mighty and strong, he says. Or that was kind of his opinion, that that would be who the fifth servant would be, a descendant of Joseph Smith. But we're getting ahead of ourselves here. So we're talking about this good tree that was planted in the Americas, the Lehi tree. And I think that tree gets torn down and replaced by the Joseph Smith tree, if I'm not mistaken. Does that sound right to the rest of you?
No, the
Russell, go
tree
ahead.
stays alive.
Say
Don't
that
cut
again.
down the tree. Don't cut down the tree.
Yes. Russell, you're on mute.
Oh, you're muted.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I was just going to comment on your servants. John in his chart shows Daniel and are all part of the Finiel angel, Daniel and Joseph and Mauricio and so forth. Yeah, he says she suggests they're all the same person.
Yeah, I remember seeing that chart. I think he did it, had it posted in a couple of his essays or articles where it's a 7 by 7. So there's 49 total, and across the top you have the seven chief angels. Enoch, well, I guess Enoch would be
Yeah, Michael, Surreal, Faniel, Uriel, Gabriel, Raphael, and Raguel.
Yeah, Enoch was Raphael, and Fanuel is the Joseph Smith column.
Right.
So that would make sense. I mean, if Daniel, we get the name of the first servant was Daniel, and if supposedly it's the same servant coming back, well, Daniel with Joseph Smith, Mauricio, a future servant, mighty and strong. I think John interpreted the second visit when Christ was here in the meridian of time as being his brother John the Just. Is that who it was? Anyway, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, and that's, I mean, that's a good and in interesting interpretation by John himself, John the Prophet. Okay, let's go on. Unless there's any other observations of those two verses. He's trying to get rid of the evil fruit. And he's like, if we don't do something, the evil fruit is going to overcome the whole tree and it will be worth nothing to me. Right? Those
No.
evil feelings mean nothing to him.
Yeah. Okay. Fruit is feelings and branches are people.
Yeah, I think in previous interpretations of Jacob chapter 5, we thought that the fruit were the people. But Acts of Three Nephites, chapter 14, with the Lord interpreting it, he makes it clear that the branches are the people and the fruit are either their good works or their good feelings, those high and holy sentiments, or the bad feelings coming from the adversary. All right, Russell, do you want to take 36?
Sure. And it came to pass that the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his servant, Let us go down into the lower part of the vineyard to see whether the natural branches also produce forth evil fruit. And it came to pass that they saw that the fruits of the natural branches were corrupted also because of that abominable church, yea, the first and the second and also the last. And all the churches that had tried to bring forth good fruit had been corrupted. But behold, the Lord of the vineyard then said to his servant, This is the fulfillment of the vision of Nephi concerning that man whom he saw that was separated from the seed of his brethren by the many waters. And I saw that the Spirit of God came down and inspired the man. And as the man went through the many waters, he came to the seed of his brethren, which was in the land of the promise, just as they saw the Spirit of God inspire other Gentiles, which are branches of the wild olive tree. And therefore, remnant of the house of Israel. And they went forth out of the captivity and crossed over the many waters and received the good land by inheritance. For they humbled themselves before the Lord, and the power of the Lord was with them.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot in this verse. Any initial thoughts?
The
Oh, sorry.
yeah, the explanation has generally been that that's Columbus, but I've seen suggested that that's not Columbus at all, that it was another, a more religious person. And I can't remember now what the suggestion was.
Yeah, I found it all always. I heard that too in the LDS church. It's like, oh yeah, they here is it talking about Columbus, and I was always like, how do people know this so for sure or something? So might be a precept of man or tradition that exists in the LDS Church that maybe needs reviewing, you could say.
Yeah.
What it stood out to me is was so be, they were corrupt because also because of that abominable church, yeah, the first and the second and also the last. Thought there was only one. What are these different time zones? The first and the second and also the last.
Right. So those are the branches that the Lord took that we read about previously that represent in verse 29, Greece.
Okay.
The second was in Rome, and the third was in Antioch. So those are the first, the second, and the last, or the third, I guess you could say, those branches that were planted in those three places along the Mediterranean, and all the churches. And I think in John's article, he identified those churches, right? The Roman Empire, or the Holy Roman, the Catholic Church, Roman Catholic, the Greek Orthodox Church, and what was the third one?
It's cryptic or something like that. The Jacobites from Antioch.
Let's see. I'm looking at John's article. Here it is. So, number one, so the tree that's planted in Israel is the religion of Judaism. That's the original tree. But then those branches that were planted in the lowlands, or the Netherlands, nethermost lands, was the
Yeah.
Greek Orthodox, the Roman Catholic, and the Syriac Orthodox Church. So those
Syriac.
Syriac Orthodox, those are the three religions associated with the branches that got planted in the lowest parts of the vineyard. And the lowest parts, John used to think that meant below sea level, but in fact, this interpretation from the Acts of the Three Nephites makes it clear that it's wickedness. You know, one was wicked, and then the next city was more wicked than the other, and then the third, the Lord planted, and he knew what he was doing, right? The servant said, "Why did you plant these three branches here? You know, these are pretty wicked places." And he's like, "Don't question me. I know what I'm doing." And from those three locations came, you know, three men that helped Christ in his ministry, right? Nicodemus, Joseph of Arimathea, and Lazarus. So the Lord knew what he was doing. I'm trying to find about Christopher Columbus. I think there's a quote, a few quotes from him where he said that the Spirit of the Lord came and wrought upon him in such a strong way that he needed to make this expedition. And it took him such a long time to get the funds from the King and Queen of Spain, you know, to fund this mission. I think one of the quotes was, "Who can doubt but that the Holy Ghost inspired me?" So there is kind of a connection there that this could still be Christopher Columbus, rather than someone else. But I think we know that he's not the first to have rediscovered the Americas. I think the Vikings had come many times before him. So whether it was him or somebody else, they were led by the Spirit of the Lord. Do we want to read that footnote in 1st Nephi chapter 13? Where the Lord, this is in fulfillment of the vision of Nephi. We can go straight to that in those three verses.
Go ahead if you have.
I've got it pulled up. Dolores, do you have it also?
No, I don't have it, but I said go ahead if you have them.
Yes. Yeah. Let
Like.
me, I'll go ahead. It's First Nephi chapter 13, verses 12 through 15. And this is Nephi speaking in his vision. "I looked, and I beheld a man among the Gentiles who was separated from the seed of my brethren by the many waters." So he's across the ocean. "And I beheld the Spirit of God, that it came down and wrought upon the man. And he went forth upon the many waters, even unto the seed of my brethren who were in the promised land." So he came across the ocean. We're assuming it was the Atlantic Ocean. He came across, and it came to pass that I beheld the Spirit of God, that it wrought upon other Gentiles, and they went forth out of captivity upon the many waters. And we're talking about the Puritans, right? Those that first came over to Plymouth Rock, after they learned of the discovery of this new land, they wanted to free themselves from the tyranny of what was happening over in Europe. And it came to pass that I beheld many multitudes of the Gentiles upon the land of promise. And I beheld the wrath of God, that it was upon the seed of my brethren, and they were scattered before the Gentiles and were smitten. Okay, so we know that from history, that the Europeans came across the ocean after the rediscovery of America, and they scattered the seed of Lehi, right? They kind of pushed them, kept pushing them until they put them on reservations. I mean, it's a sad fact of history that that's how it happened, but it was foretold for many generations that that's when the Gentiles came, that the seed of Lehi would be suppressed for a time. Okay, anything else in that verse? So I mean, whether that was Columbus or some other man, the spirit of the Lord came and rested upon him, and it also rested upon these other Gentiles that came across, which it says are branches of the wild olive tree, therefore a remnant of the house of Israel.
Yeah. Also makes me think about the Mayflower, you know, the ship that had some of the founding fathers on the Constitution.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was also an interesting mix of people.
Exactly. Yeah, they're coming over from across, escaping persecution.
Yeah,
It's
looking
interesting that,
for freedom. Yeah.
yeah, and they
Yeah.
came across and founded a free nation. They came out of captivity, and they
Yeah.
threw off those shackles, and they formed a free nation. And it was because they humbled themselves before the Lord that the power of the Lord was with them.
Anyway, it's history repeating sometimes, I think.
They received the good land by inheritance. How I'm at a loss what that how that happens. I can understand by their righteousness over the Lamanites, but is it through Joseph Smith when he asked for the like Abraham and Lehi, they received the inheritance of the land through a covenant with God. Is that a phrase referring to Joseph Smith's good land by inheritance? Or is there some other meaning there? Or am I putting too much in it, into it?
It's a good question. I know that many of the Gentiles were, who says it says that they were a remnant of the house of Israel, they came from the tribe of Ephraim. And Ephraim was a son of Joseph that
Okay.
was sold into slavery and became the second in command in Egypt. So Ephraim and Manasseh, they came across. I think Manasseh was mostly
Layman.
Yeah, Lamanites, but you have Ephraim coming over that was spread amongst the Gentiles
Okay.
across the many waters. And so, because their father was also Joseph, and he gave that prophecy, or the patriarchal blessing that he received from his father was that his descendants would go across the ocean, you know, a fruitful bow that goes over the well. Is I guess that's how that would be interpreted. They received the land also by inheritance
Okay.
because they humbled themselves, right? That was kind of one of the prerequisites. And so the power of the Lord was with them. So yeah, technically it was Joseph's land. The land of Americas was for his seed and his their inheritance, Ephraim and Manasseh, Lehi, and then the Gentiles that came later that
Okay.
are Ephraim.
Thank you.
All right. Dolores, do you want to take verse 37?
Sure. But these last grafted branches, that is, Gentiles, brought to this land overseas will also surmount the seed of Lehi and his brethren, and the branch of the seed of his brethren will dry up and die, and the Lord will cry for his loss, because all the fruit of his vineyard will perish, except these. But now they are also corrupted, and all the trees of his vineyard are of no avail except to be cut down and cast into the fire. You want me to go on?
Go ahead and read the next verse.
But behold, the Lord of the vineyard cut off the trees that obstructed this piece of land and planted another tree in his place, fulfilling the promise which Joseph, the son of Jacob, had obtained from God the Father when he told him that he would raise from his loins a fair branch to the house of Israel, and being righteous, though he is a Gentile, will be counted as being part of the natural olive tree, for he will be truly a descendant of Joseph, not the Messiah, but that graft of which Lehi prophesied, which is to come in the fullness of the Gentiles in the last days, when your descendants have degenerated, fallen into unbelief, yea, for the space of many years and for many generations after the Messiah manifested himself in person to the children. And then the fullness of my gospel shall come to the Gentiles, and of or from the Gentiles to the remnant of your descendants.
Right. What do we think is happening here?
Go. Yeah.
Adoption also.
When the Gentiles come, when they in verse 37, when they come across, they'll surmount the seed of Lehi, or in other words, overcome, and the Lord will cry for his loss, because the fruit will perish except these, but are also now corrupted, and all the trees avail him nothing and should be cast down and thrown into the fire. But then in verse 38, it says he planted another tree in its place. And so I think that's where John and his interpretation gets the idea that this other tree takes the place of the tree of Lehi that was planted in this good land. And that other tree was Joseph Smith. So the first original tree in America was Lehi, but because it had the Lord cried for its loss, the seed of the brethren of Nephi's brethren, the Lamanites withered up and died. And so the Lord planted a new tree in its place, fulfilling the promise of Joseph, son of Jacob, being the fair branch raised up to the house of Israel. And though he be a Gentile, this is speaking of Joseph Smith, he will be counted as being part of the natural olive tree, for he himself will truly be a descendant of Joseph. Not the Messiah, but a graft that Lehi prophesied, which is to come in the fullness of the Gentiles. Are we talking about Joseph Smith here? I mean, that makes sense to me.
Right. And it fulfills the prophecy of Joseph way back from Egypt, right?
And then the fullness of my gospel shall come to the Gentiles. Well, who was that prophet that was raised up to restore and bring back the fullness of the gospel? Well, that was Joseph Smith. And from him to the remnant of your descendants, which would be the seed of Lehi that was still left in the land. I mean, there's still hope for the seed of Lehi. They are going to come back with power in the last days.
This part to me is most clear of all of it, to be honest. That part fits like a glove.
I looked up the footnote, the first footnote, and planted another tree in his place. And then it says Jacob 5, verse 44. And then I read it, and I'm like, okay. So it says Jacob 5, verse 44, born in tribulation in a wilderness and hated of our brethren, which caused wars and contentions. Wherefore we did mourn out our days. So the tree grows up in these circumstances, probably. The tree is born in tribulation. Don't you think? If it
Yeah, I think you're
it's a
right.
footnote, it says a footnote. Well, anyway.
And right now, the native Indians, they are really getting together and educating themselves to use the laws to make sure they get what the United States promised them. And they are becoming quite a force among us, I believe. I know here in the Native Alaskans here, they wrote into the Alaskan Constitution and its federal law that gives them rights that were denied previously. They make sure that they get their rights.
Well, I believe that's why some of their other additional records are coming forth to them. Right, we've been able to read some of them, the Namenha being one of them, and other records. Chief Mitigah, he's got some bark scrolls or something like that that they're going to be releasing to the public. But I think it's to awaken these descendants of Lehi, so that they can, like a young lion, right, going through in the midst of everyone. When the Lord springs the trap, they will spring forth and come out. Come back with a vengeance, as it were. They still have a role to play in the winding up scene. The other footnote, Belkia read Jacob 5, verse 44, but I've got 1 Nephi 15, 13. That says, and now the thing which our father meaneth concerning the grafting in of the natural branches through the fullness of the Gentiles is that in the latter days, when our seed shall have dwindled in unbelief, yea, for the space of many years and many generations, which it just said that many years and many generations, after the Messiah shall be manifest in body unto the children of men, then shall the fullness of the gospel of the Messiah come unto the Gentiles, and from the Gentiles unto the remnant of our seed. So
Don't you think
Jesus,
that
as his...
the manifestation also took place or not?
of the Savior, when the Savior came among the Nephites, you mean?
No, it says here, and for many generations after the Messiah manifests himself.
Right. That's what that I think means. He came to the land bountiful in many generations. And if you remember, I think it was what the third generation, they had already fallen back into iniquity after he left. But that fits. That fits.
Many years and many generations after he came among them, after his resurrection, then the fullness of my gospel shall come to the Gentiles. So I guess you could say it was 1800 years later.
Well, the fullness of my gospel.
That'd be Joseph Smith.
By the way,
Because the gospel was.
I put in chat an article that suggests that John Eliot might be the person instead of Columbus.
Oh, John Eliot. Okay. Yeah, thank you for that. Let's look at well, I'm going to click the link just so I have it before the chat, before
The
meeting ends. The Christopher Columbus myth. All right. Yeah. Thank you for that. Let's see. How are we doing on time? Oh, we got some time. Let's keep going. Let's see. Who hasn't read? Steve, have you read?
No, I haven't. Let's see
Do
if
you want to
we'll
take the next couple of verses, 39 and 40?
be glad to. Yea, to bring the Gentiles out of the darkness which shall be upon the earth in those days. Nevertheless, this gift will be a seer who will guide my people again to the path of light. And the Lord of the vineyard saw that a part of this planted tree in the last days produced good and bad fruit. That is, good and bad feelings in the people who make up the branches of his vineyard, in such a way that the brave branch produced bad fruit that surpassed the good branch. And now, after all the care we have taken with the vineyard, its grafts have become corrupted, so that none of them bring forth good fruit. And these I hope to keep in order to get its fruits for me for the season to come.
Okay, that I think that's pretty obvious that the graft will be a seer who will guide my people again into the path of light. That seer was the prophet Joseph Smith at the time of the restoration of the fullness of the gospel among the Gentiles. But then it talks about, this is interesting, in verse 40, part of this planted tree. Which appears to be the tree that supplanted the Lehi tree, which is now the Joseph Smith tree. Part of that tree in the last days will produce both good and bad fruit, or in other words, the good and bad feelings in the people who make up the branches. In such a way
Okay,
that
there
the,
it is.
yeah,
There it is.
right there. So there's a brave branch and then there's a good branch. So
Yeah, that's what I noticed.
who are we talking about here?
Yeah.
Who are the two main factions of the LDS movement? The brave branch, I perceive that to be the Brigham Young branch, and the good branch is the Joseph Smith the third branch, right? As they kind of branched off, and because of
That's a
polygamy
foot.
and other things, the brave
I
branch
get.
was able to overcome the good.
That's true.
Is that what we're seeing here? I mean, here, let me.
I'm
John
looking at the
Bunko.
foot. Yeah, I'm looking at the footnote, but it does not make a lot of sense to me.
Here, let me put this back in. I
The
know we
good
picked.
branch. There's a footnote at good branch, so.
Don't know if I can paste a screenshot into the chat or not, but in John's article, if you scroll down to about the middle, there's a little picture that has the main branches of the Joseph Smith senior family tree. And you can see Joseph Smith senior is kind of at the breakoff point. Then you've got Hiram Smith and Joseph F. Smith that go one direction. And then Joseph Smith Jr. and Joseph Smith the third that go the other direction. Those are kind of the two main branches, representing those two main factions. After the martyrdom that kind of split into two groups. Obviously, there were other smaller groups that broke off, but the LDS and the RLDS, the brave branch and the good branch, I think is what it's talking about here.
Yeah, but I did one translation in the of the Portuguese. And it says the angry branch produced bad fruits.
Oh, that's interesting.
Angry branch.
Instead of the brave?
Yeah, well, it said bad. Yeah, it was, instead of brave, it said angry. So that really surprised me.
Yeah,
But
that's
that's just one. Yeah, I should look at other translations.
the brave branch produced bad fruits and surpassed the good branch. And after all the care we have taken, its grafts have become corrupted so that none of them bring forth good fruit. And these I had hoped to keep in order to get its fruits for me for the season to come, or for the I don't know if the season to come in this context is our day, or if that's referring to you in a future day in the millennium. But regardless, we're seeing that both the LDS and the RLDS fell back into apostasy and have become no use to the Lord, which necessitates what we're seeing now in the days of Mauricio with the second invitation. The Lord is calling his people again. Will you come back to me? Any additional thoughts on this?
Another translation is wild branch.
Yeah, I have the two wild branch. Yeah.
Wild? The wild branch, brave branch, angry branch. Surpassing the good. Have we all had a chance to read? I didn't want to skip anyone. Belkia, did you also read?
No, I have not. Do you want me to do 41?
Yes, please. Maybe 41 and
Okay.
42.
But behold, they became like the wild olive tree, and they are of no use except to be cut down and cast into the fire. But I feel sorry to lose them, just like the rest of my vineyard. What, oh dash, what else could, however, I have done in my vineyard? I have nourished them, and I have digged around them, and I have pruned, and I have fertilized its roots. And I have stretched forth mine hand almost all the days long. But behold, the end draweth nigh, and therefore I feel I have to cut down all the trees of my vineyard and cast them into the fire, that they may be burned. But who is it that has corrupted my vineyard? And it came to pass that the Lord of the vineyard said unto the servant, Let us go and hew down the trees of the vineyard and cast them into the fire, that they shall not cumber the ground of my vineyard, for I have done all I could. What could I have done more for my vineyard? But behold, the servant said unto the Lord of the vineyard, Spare it a little longer. And the Lord said, Yea, I will spare it a little longer. For it grieved me that I should lose the trees of my vineyard. That's great. That's another a deal. W what Moses also does, you know, he's negotiating with God also. And I also I think Abraham also did that. I'm not sure, but another example that God is yeah, open for discussion, maybe, don't you think? Sometimes with good arguments.
Yeah, Abraham was the one that says, well, what if 50 were righteous or 40 or 20 or
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
10?
that's it. Thank you, Russell. Yeah, the no negotiation of the righteous people in the city.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
I see this servant, Joseph Smith was cut down before his time. He was martyred, taken from the earth. I see him back in heaven on the other side of the veil, and he's saying, Lord, let's spare it for just a little bit longer. And he, almost like, send me back down one last time.
Or it could be Mauricio saying it.
Yeah, send me back down as Mauricio
Yeah.
and let's spare it a little bit longer so that we don't lose the tree. And the Lord agrees, let's do that. I'll send you back down. And then this is where the complicated grafting takes place, to kind of save all the trees. He's got to take and graft from the LDS and the RLDS and Jews and Gentiles, and it's quite the complicated task that they have in this generation. Now I think what brings us to our day, to what's happening now. Go ahead, Russell.
Well, I think it's interesting that verse 41 ends with a question. Who is it that has corrupted my vineyard? Without an answer.
Yeah,
But
that's
there's a footnote.
Should we go there? Jacob chapter 5, 46 and 47.
Yeah, these footnotes seems to, well, anyway, yeah.
I think it's just a recap because we get the same question at the end of verse 47. Who is it that has corrupted my vineyard?
Yeah.
We know the answer to that, right? I mean, he who has, I mean, think about all the cycles of pride and all the downfalls and all, we can apply that even to this day, particularly to this day. And he would be the person who was pride as a tool and caused the restored gospel to be plunt or polluted, or at least that's what seems obvious to me.
So it's pride among those groups that
Yeah. All right. Well, let me go on in verse 43 and maybe 44. We'll see where that takes us with time. We got about 7 minutes. 43 says, therefore, or let us therefore take the branches of these which I have planted in the low parts of my vineyard, which is those three branches that were in the Mediterranean, and graft them on the tree from which they proceeded. The tree that they were taken from was in Jerusalem. It was the original House of Israel tree. That is in the original graft. And pluck from the tree the branches that give the most bitter fruits, and graft in its place the natural branches coming from the original tree, so that the tree does not die, but preserve for me your roots to comply with my purpose. So I think in that verse is talking about those three branches along the Mediterranean are going to be grafted back into the original tree in Jerusalem, and he'll cut off the branches that are producing the most wicked fruit and put these righteous grafts in their place to preserve the tree so that it doesn't die. And verse 44, and behold, the roots of the natural branches of the tree, which I planted where I pleased, are still alive, scattered throughout all the land of my vineyard, that I may preserve them also for a purpose of mine. I will therefore take its branches and graft them again into the original tree. Yea, I will graft upon them the branches of the original tree, that I also may preserve the roots unto myself, that when they are strong enough, they may bring forth good fruits for me, and I may have glory in the fruit of my vineyard. So it's also saying that the good fruit of the Jerusalem tree, those that were still producing good fruit, he put those over in Rome, Greece, and what was the other one?
Antioch.
Antioch.
Antioch. Antioch.
Put
Yeah.
those so that you're doing a complicated reversal, right? You're taking off the bad branches of both sides and then taking and regrafting branch good branches across so that you've got the original tree and then the natural branches being grafted into the original.
Yeah, but should it not also already be globally? And let go of the three locations that because it's now everywhere, you know. If you, I think, planted in the low parts of my vineyard, you know, people who are like in societies where there is a lot of things going on, and if you then still can have the hope in Christ, that is a good branch then. Which can then be grafted on the original tree. It's at least that's how I see it a little bit. Like, yeah, like our societies, they are Sodom and Gomorrah, you know. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. It's not, yeah, not so great. But anyway, those were some of my thoughts.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, I'm just trying to keep in my mind, keep it straight of who's getting grafted where and why.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a good question. How do you get grafted back into the Jewish root? And how can that be occurring in our day? What does that mean? Maybe we take that up next week.
Yeah, that's a good question. I know that there's Messianic Jews who are coming to the knowledge of the Savior, and they actually believe that he was the man that came 2,000 years ago. So maybe that's part of this grafting.
That feels correct. That feels like
And is
and
it not, it is, oh, sorry, Steve.
no, I was
Oh,
done.
is it not Israel? Because it's, is it only Jews? Should be Israel because are not.
Yeah, you're right. The original tree was the whole house of Israel, and they all started out in Jerusalem before they were scattered.
So that's where the tribes come in, you know. I think that's what's happening now. There was for a certain time a belief here that here in the Netherlands people were from Zebulun and Issachar. I wrote you something about that, right, Russell, sometime?
I don't remember, but you could have.
So, and Dan, you know, Denmark. So I think it's in our DNA or something, you know, and then
Good point.
we are the tribes, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, I feel sometimes like that. The more I read about Issachar and Zebulun, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's what's happening here in our country, you know, because they will, you know, take advantage of the ground and suck it, all the resources from it. Well, it's happening here, so But anyway, I think it's universal, globally more, it's just a thought I
Yeah.
had.
Yeah, you're right. I think, and in verse a couple of verses later, which we'll get to next week, it talks about the Lord stretching forth his hand a second time, which brings us to our day, which is the second invitation, and so on. So I think we're at time. We stopped in verse, what was it, 44? So I read 44. So we'll start in verse 45 next week.
All right, sounds great.